Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday, the 4th of April. A delight to have you with us and a delight to be here, I think. And we're all nodding enthusiastically. Joining us for our roundtable discussion this morning, we have WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Big Joe and Ray and all of you and everybody else in the whole place.
Hello.
Yeah, say hi to Rosemary. She doesn't want to get her feelings hurt.
Hi, Rosemary.
There you go. Let's see. We also want to, of course, welcome Albany professor and investigative, University of Albany professor and investigative journalist Rosemary Armail.
Our pal.
Hello.
Pal, indeed. And newsman Ray Graff in today. Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, good to have you here.
Thank you very much for letting me do this.
I feel it's the least I can do. Good morning and welcome. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We want to talk about a bunch of topics today, scintillating things that are happening in the news. So we will get to them because there's a lot happening. First and foremost, we talked about this issue yesterday. It's a tragedy, of course, and a little more light has been shed on what happened. Although not a lot more, in the aftermath of the deadly rampage at Fort Hood in November of 2009 that left 13 people dead, Defense Secretary Robert Gates announced a Pentagon review of the shooting to help ensure, he said, that nothing like this ever happens again. Well, nearly 5 years later, it did. And what we learned yesterday was that it was in a similar fashion, and quite eerily a similar fashion. An Iraq war veteran, Ivan Antonio Lopez, 34 years old, killed three people, wounded 16 others at Fort Hood before taking his own life. He did so in Army uniform after sneaking a high-powered handgun onto the base, just as the 2009 gunman had done. So this is one of the many, many questions of again, after this review, or what we were told was going to be a review, and a look at the procedures of how a soldier enters the base with a gun.
Well, they have reviewed and they have looked. They just haven't done anything about it.
Right.
The review shows that bases have been much too focused on setting up a perimeter to prevent assaults from the outside and not looking at what happens when there's an attack on the inside against others. And that's exactly what happened in 2009
there are some.
And now.
Yeah. Now, there are some who think that if you armed everybody, and we have this in the schools, too. Somebody has come up with a plan to arm teachers. If you arm everybody, if everybody has a gun, then when somebody who is a troubled soul or whatever comes on, somebody else could take their gun and shoot them. I don't go along with this, but it's extraordinary how black is white, white is black, up is down.
Yeah, you're right, Alan. That was all over right-wing radio yesterday, that's the way. If only there had been more guns on that basis would have been prevented. In fact, there's a lot of guns on Fort Hood. There's nothing that they're not actually prevented from coming. You simply have to register, and they use something like an honor system. So you come onto the base and you say, you know, I'm armed, and you put that down. This guy did not do that. Lopez did not do that, and he didn't want to. This follows a pattern that of mass attacks, not just in the U.S., but in the military bases. But Fort Hood is just like one of our neighborhoods. It's all huge. There's lots of people. You can't control everyone. There's no way you could search every car coming in for weapons or for people with mental health problems. What do you do about it? So you have these incidents in the United States where guns are very prevalent.
I'm trying to play out in my mind, and I apologize if this is going off topic slightly, but I'm trying to play out in my mind what would happen if you were armed. So what are we then supposed to have a shootout?
Yeah, that was the idea.
Yeah. I can't imagine a time or place where that seems like a rational idea.
The conservatives would point out. Am I interrupting
what?
You?
What? No, I was interrupting you, and I apologize. But the point you just made, you know, if somebody is shooting someone, then isn't that you know, if somebody has a gun and a right to bear a gun, isn't that the time to use the gun if he's killing people?
I think the idea, to me, the idea of having if in this case three people, if they are all armed and then they all and I'm not saying that anyone is going to do this, but then if they do go after the person or each other, it just seems to me you're putting that many more people in harm's way.
In both the incidents on foot at Fort Hood, they were stopped by a woman MP. Interestingly, both were women, one of the eerie similarities. But they both came up to, with great bravery, came up to the attackers with guns. And that's how both incidences ended. So it's given impetus to the argument you're making.
And the other thing to remember...
Well, actually...
Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, actually, the guy killed himself. That's something.
After one confronted. I didn't mean to imply. Yeah, she didn't. She confronted him, and he pulled the trigger on himself.
And I think
I also wanted to point out Tombstone, Arizona, where Wyatt and his brothers, put guns off the street, had a marked decrease. Now it's a long time since then in violence, but it's a long time since then. But it seems to me it's so clear: the fewer guns you have, the fewer people are going to be tempted to use them. Period.
Okay. Mother Jones Magazine did a piece today looking at mass murders in the U.S. There have been 67 of them since 1982, 30 of them since 2012. Fascinating. And horrifying.
There is a paragraph in the article in the New York Times this morning. It says, those who work or visit the base agree that it was not feasible for a post like Fort Hood to check thoroughly for guns. Fred Burton, a former counterterrorism agent at the State Department who is now a security analyst for an international intelligence firm, said he had visited the base the day before the shooting to do research for a book he is writing. Nobody at the main entrance was asking me if I had a gun, and nobody was checking. So why isn't it feasible? I mean, it's feasible for us to check people at the airport. It's feasible for us to check people when you walk into a concert. It's feasible for us to...
You can't check everyone coming into, say, New York City, for example, or coming into Albany.
Yeah, but this is a base. Stop you.
Yeah, but it's huge.
Over 100,000. Bigger than this city and bigger than many cities. And it's also a place where many come and go fast, some of them coming back from dangerous, traumatizing assignments, some just out on the way to dangerous and traumatizing assignments. So there's a level of stress there for sure, but it's enormous. 100,000, well over 100,000.
I'm willing to bet you that Joe's point is excellent. I'm willing to bet you that when they come up with a fix the next time, there's going to be some checking involved.
Well, it seems to me that if that's the problem of people coming in with the guns, and then that's what you're worried about, that is part of the solution, right? I mean, I understand saying that it's a challenge, okay? If you had said it is a challenge to get everybody and some things are going to fall through the cracks, I'll buy that. To use the word it's not feasible, that I don't quite understand. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well... I don't think you can check everybody for guns. I just don't think you can do it on a military base where, as Ray points out, there's a reason to have them. They are armed. These are armed men. The problem here is you've got people who are being treated for severe mental problems, and they are not recognized as dangerous. That's what happened in both of these cases.
And then you go
which case now?
The two Fort Hood cases.
The first Fort Hood case was clearly a jihad of sorts.
All right, true. He had an Islamic, but the rest of the case is exactly like that. He was a man with deep problems, and he was known to have those problems, and he was on the base and just went crazy without any kind of prior warning.
And you're also, he went to a store in Killeen, Texas.
Same store. Guns Galore.
Guns Galore.
Love the name.
Now, I don't. But I mean, how does that happen?
The guy who runs the store says...
How does what happen?
How do you go in if with this history, right? With this history, to go in, especially, and again, I understand how it happens, but what my question is, why do we allow it to continue to happen? Where you have an incident just in 2009, same story. You have a soldier who is troubled, goes in, buys a gun, all's okay, gets it
legally buys a gun.
Legally buys a gun. Well,
yes,
right.
That's not the store's fault.
No, I'm not saying it is.
Okay.
The owner of the store said, hey, I'm a legitimate businessman. What is in it for me to sell guns to crazy people, go out and do this stuff? That's not good for business. Hey, he's got a point.
I agree. But should it be, you know, should that be, should that make sense?
No, I think the law should change.
We have a fabric of guns in this country, which is part of a larger movement. We have the same five guys on the Supreme Court saying guns go. It's part of what we think. And you take a look at that, what they're saying there and what they're saying about virtually everything else in terms of an open society, putting a coalition together. I find it all very scary.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. There is a I think when you look at it overall, you wonder, again, you know, at what point, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, but I think you talked to the representative from Connecticut, whose name is escaping me at the moment, in our congressional corner. And
Congresswoman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
Esty.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And her gender escaped you too.
No. did it? Yeah. You were talking.
No,
about,
I thought you were neutral. Yeah.
You were talking about the specific issue of, you know, you thought that Newtown would be a tipping point, that it would lead to something, yeah. and here we are almost 2 years later, year and a half, and no. You know, and you wonder, okay, so this is the second attack. Will anything dramatically change if we, you know, God forbid there's nothing else that happens. But if we look at this in 5 years, it's been 5 years since this incident. If we look in 5 years, will we see the same situation or will we see a vastly different situation? I'd love to think we'll see a vastly different situation, but I don't think we will.
There's always the finger pointing. So, for example, Elizabeth just wrote us, every shooter in these mass murders is not only armed but taking prescription drugs that are known to, in capital letters, cause bizarre behavior. The manufacturers and those who prescribe them should not get a pass on this one. And And then we have Norman. What does Norman say? Oh, it amazes me that in Gunzo America, so much attention is being given to yet another mass killing. It is our lot. Let's give credit to the NRA and move on. That's what he said.
Ray Graff.
Well, I was getting back to your point that nothing has changed since Sandy Hook, and I would say that, in fact, in many places, there has been a tremendous change.
No,
New York,
Connecticut,
the rules have changed. What hasn't changed is in many places the enforcement of the already existing rules, and what also will never change is if someone's going to kill, they're going to kill, and they don't need a gun to kill.
Absolutely.
You mean this country? I don't know. You mean this country can't come up with a set of rules and prescriptions and we say you can't smoke and people stop smoking. We say you can't kill or we have to find ways to stop it that we're going to give up on it and say well, they're going to kill. They're going to kill.
Thou shall not kill has been on the books for a few thousand years now.
It shouldn't be one or the other.
So.
We need new rules on regulating guns, and we need better enforcement. There were rules on that base. You are absolutely right about that. That were not enforced. There's no metal detectors,
but there weren't good rules.
Right, and that's my point. If you have these and you allow you have a situation, are we going to see? My point of Sandy Hook was not that there was anything that nothing had been done. My point with Sandy Hook of mentioning it was that we thought we saw it as a tipping point. We in this particular case in 2009, we were told there was going to be a top to bottom review. They were going to change things, and this would never happen again on the base. 5 years later, it happens again on the base. The question I pose is: if 5 years in the future, could it happen again? God forbid. I hope it doesn't. But if you look at it at the same situation and wonder where we are, if somebody in 5 years, an investigative reporter walks in and tries to take a gun in, you know, will they be able to get it in? You know, and I think that's the point I was trying to make.
I think things are
there is also
change. I'm sorry, I was going to just say I think things are going to change just as it did in gay rights. If you could have at one point said, oh, in 5 years, is it going to be any different? And wow, it is really different.
Yeah, but
these
what's the tipping
change.
Point? Yeah. I mean, my God, you kill children in a school. You kill children in a kindergarten class. If you're not safe there and that doesn't change it, what is going to change it?
So what would you do to protect the kids in the schools?
Well, I think there's a lot.
Well, you know what we would do. There are a lot of things you can do. You can set up guards. You can set up metal detectors. Whatever you have to do, you do. And you can also take on this very strong NRA lobby, which has so much power because the people who believe in guns, and there were 300 million guns, we estimate, in the United States, that people who believe in guns are going to just be out there. They were out there in front of the legislature the other day in New York. But Andrew Cuomo, I got to say this for him, he had a lot of guts.
Yeah, you're right. And this is, again, just like gay rights, the moral majority was firmly against that, felt it was an act against God. And they fought as strongly as, although not quite as efficiently as the NRA. And I think we have reached the tipping point, Joe. I think people do feel differently. It's just that our legislators haven't caught up with us yet.
We're going to stop there. We'll take a pause and get in the announcements we need to get in, and then we will hear an NPR news break, and we'll be back with more issues. I didn't think it was going to. Yeah, I was saying to Rosemary, I don't know if we have like really meaty topics. And look at that. Yeah, just went over and everything. All right.
Well, it's downhill from here.
Yeah, so there you go, Ray. Good thoughts. WAMC.org/roundtable and also roundtable@WAMC.org. If you would like to write us, we'd love for you to share your thoughts. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Ray Graff, Joe Donahue, here we are, and we welcome your thoughts, roundtable@WAMC.org. We have lots of letters, and Alan, you can start the parade.
Okay, Emily writes, I love your panel, so I don't mean to be disrespectful to anyone on it. However, I disagree with Joe and Ray that if someone's going to kill someone, they're going to kill someone. The NRA loves to say guns don't kill people, people kill people. But people who don't have guns don't kill people with guns. I like it. Guns make it way too easy to kill people. Okay, it's less a little long, so we'll go on to the next one. It was very good.
But by the way,
Emily.
I don't think Joe, think Ray and I agreed.
No, Joe agrees with you that it only it's only guns, that no one's ever killed anyone in any other way.
I don't think we were on the same page on that one, but go ahead.
That's fine.
Okay, Joanne says, so odd that no one has mentioned background checks for the purchase of firearms. The Army is almost a country unto itself, and surely they can mark a soldier's, quote, record that they are temporarily restricted from purchasing firearms off base. Well, I don't know that that would have meant anything, but it's a good idea. I mean, I think everything, all of this is good stuff. And then Ernest sent us a long thing, which I don't quite understand, which is something from King Lear, I believe.
Ah. All right.
Well.
And a long thing.
Please do a soliloquy.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
There were no guns in King
Lear. Next step. Yeah.
You're going to do King Lear?
Yeah, right. Okay. And
that would
and
be
Cheryl
great.
Says, if you,
out, vile jelly.
If you
where is thy luster now?
You always surprise me, Ray. Always. Says Cheryl, if you want an example of a gun rights activist society, Libya, Mogadishu, Nigeria, guns everywhere and easy access to guns. Do we want America to turn into that? Said Cheryl. And then there's a very interesting letter from Meddens, from Walker, who tells us that it has to do with the evaluation process. And sometimes it's normal for the military to hold off on a formal finding until everything is tested. And maybe that's the reason he is not on the list regarding background checks, ? The Department of Defense has made progress in reducing some backlog, but Fort Hood is the most important place to escalate the mental health treatment, me thinks. And
more
like
Shakespeare.
That, and then,
well done.
And then thank you, Ray. And then Daniel Hood, Daniel H., I'm so sorry. I believe we should also look at the role Ambien plays in this, which was prescribed to the shooter. Okay, and
well, that's
Michael
a that's
says,
an interesting yes, that's an interesting case actually, because Ambien. I mean, Ambien has that. Questions about Ambien of you know people who are suddenly who was there was a celebrity that used this as a defense that they were suddenly driving down the highway at 60 miles an hour 20 miles from their home and didn't even know that they had left.
Oh,
so I don't know, something to be I don't know if it plays a role or not, but it's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then Michael says the NRA is an enemy of the people and needs to be eliminated. They're responsible for these shootings. Woo.
I like that one.
You like that one?
Yeah, I like that one. I think the NRA, really, I mean, I admire how organized and well-funded they are, but they are doing some, like, bad things, like shutting down research and shutting down Congress acting on this.
Yep. Yep. Okay, well, I think that's all I got.
All right. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we will go on to other topics. Let us talk about Cuban Twitter. So this is I think, interesting. On Thursday, the U.S. Agency for International Development confirmed the broad outlines of an Associated Press report exposing the clandestine creation of a phony Cuban Twitter network that was meant to undermine the government now headed by Fidel Castro's brother, Raul. The audacious program set in motion through shell companies around the world lured 40,000 unsuspecting Cuban subscribers with seemingly innocuous text messages about sports and popular music, the report said. Its creators called the network Zunzeño.
Mm-hmm.
Cuban slang for the sound that a hummingbird makes, in with the Twitter
language.
Keeping with the bird stuff.
With a theme, you see. The program survived barely 2 years, failing in 2012 as its funding dried up. The campaign became, as so many before it, a punchline in the annals of an enduring, bizarre, and frequently imagination-defying international standoff. There's some good language for you. What do you make of this, Rosemary?
Oh, abhorrent behavior by the U.S. government. The idea, I don't know if this is clear, you have to read this story a couple times to get it, is they lure people in by writing about sports and music, but the real idea was to write anti-Cuban government messages written by operatives in the U.S. It's propaganda. It's going after a government that we disagree with in a really sneaky and kind of stupid way. It didn't work very well.
No.
And it goes along with putting poison in the skin diving suit of the president of Fidel Castro and exploding cigars. It's just stupid. time for a look at our policy towards Cuba, and let's start acting like adults. I think someone should go to jail for this.
Why?
But by the way,
I mean, no harm, no foul, right? You created a Twitter network. They joined voluntarily. I mean, Patrick Leahy said it best, dumb.
No, you're
they made a mistake. I mean,
You're putting Cubans into danger. You know, you don't know what kind of punishment there will be against them by their government. You're lying. We're supposed to be the beacon of democracy and freedom in America. Oh, I think the American administrators have put this into place.
On what charge?
I don't know. I have to look up the penal code. Check back with me tomorrow.
Okay.
I do wonder, though, if as you put a program into place like this, you know, if you can't fund it. I mean, you know.
Well, it's electrons. I mean, how you have somebody in an office, an intern, making some stupid posts, and.
Yeah, but you can't fund that. Like, it dried up because
we don't fund our interns either.
I know that's not what I meant, but I mean,
it's like a half-hearted attempt.
Yeah,
like you're saying,
you don't even put the money. You don't even have the money to sort it. You're like, you just do it. It doesn't work, and I go with the great senator. Yeah, dumb. Yeah,
yeah, and the damage done to the American image is you know far more costly than I don't know, just ridiculous.
Alan, what do you think?
Do you really want to know what I think? I mean, because I'll be honest with you, what I think is not popular with a lot of our listeners. I agree. Dumb. This was stupid. We should have done it. And as usual, we got caught doing it and stupid. But you know, Cuba, who many people I know have visited many times, is a dictatorship. No two ways about it. And if you have anything to say, so this is the only thing I'm thinking about. If you have anything to say about your own government, you can go to jail, and people do. And I don't like that. Now, does the United States have any reason to intervene in this? I don't think so. I don't think it's right, to be honest with you. But I'm always struck by the people who would defend, you know, Cuba as this great democracy because it isn't.
I don't know anybody who defends them as a great democracy, but this happened when Raul was in office. That's after Fidel left, when there's a great lightning.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm positive.
No, wait a second. No. Are you sure who's in charge? is my question.
Oh. Well, in other words, okay, even if Fidel is capable, which I'm not sure that he is, there's no evidence he is, and Raul certainly followed his bidding. However, there has been definitely a lessening of the laws and the social controls in Cuba. There's not a democracy, but there's more freedom there than there has been since 1959.
So,
but people are still going to jail, Rosemary.
I'm trying to find the distinction here between the old shortwave propaganda broadcast that all the countries did, and this, which is more or less a new way of doing the same thing. It's propaganda.
No, what America did was Voice of America, which was to send into enemy countries the truth. This is sheer propaganda. And Alan, one of the people who went to jails is an American who's accused and being held by the Cubans for internet spying, for exactly what this program did, even though he's not connected with it. We put an American into danger with this program.
But do we have some of the text of what was said in these posts?
The AP story has them. I don't have that right here. Okay. They were just generally
anti-government. Well, and remember the Cuba, and to be fair, remember that Cuba does its own exporting of its own radio waves and the rest of the
Many
stuff.
Countries so do.
That's been going on for a long time, yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will return and go to other topics of the day. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from SUNY Ulster Online, introducing Fast Finish for adult learners with online accelerated courses for associate's degrees in as fast as 17 months, sunyulster.edu/fastfinish. And Kentco Work and Play Outfitters, Kingston, now taking reservations for the newly opened Kentco's Interactive Archery Range inside the expanded Big Green Building on Route 28, atkentco.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo sent me a link last night to a very interesting article that was on MSNBC's website talking about Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobby, the corporation suing the U.S. government on the grounds that providing its employees with health insurance violates its owners' religious beliefs by forcing them to cover the cost of contraception, has invested millions in the pharmaceutical firms that produce contraception and abortion drugs, the company's owners have said. So if Hobby Lobby, in fact, invests a lot of money in employer 401k matches and companies that manufacture such drugs, that should significantly weaken Hobby Lobby's claim that the contraception mandate imposes a substantial burden, according to a former Obama administration Justice Department official and a law professor at the University of Michigan, Samuel Bagenstos.
I'm interested in what you think about this, Alan, because I had said, Hobby Lobby is so seemingly pure on the surface. They're really trying to do the right thing, even though it may be something the rest of us don't disagree with. This seems to indicate otherwise. They were not checking where their 401k money was going, and they invested unwisely, and it looks hypocritical. Is that something that justices will look at? Didn't come up.
I don't think so.
You don't think so? I mean, it didn't come up, right, when they discussed it.
It's as American as apple pie. You know, money trumps everything. Every time I have a controller, for example, if I'm getting this right, on the air and I have a talk with them, they always go out of their way to say, I don't believe in what's happening here as a result of this, but we have to decide what the best bang for the buck for the 401ks of New Yorkers are when we make our investments. So we're talking now about smoking, we're talking about this and that. So in other words, that while pressure does get exerted on controllers, and they do more and more invest based on the politics of the situation, you know, in the end, it's the return on the money that becomes important. Now, have I missed something here?
No, I fear that you are correct, but how hypocritical it seems that they go to the Supreme Court to have a look at their employee hospitalization programs, that this is sure. part of their mandate, but not on their investment program. It just seems so hypocritical.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, hypocrisy is thy name. Hmm. Shakespeare, you know.
Yes, more back to King Lear, apparently. Yes. Yeah. Good stuff.
Two gentlemen of Verona, New York. It'll be at the Linda a little later on in the week.
With a shadow cast.
Linda.
I knew her.
I knew her. Linda.
Verona. I knew her.
Yeah. Oh,
Linda
okay.
of Verona, yeah.
Yeah. So I think there is an interesting point here, which is a larger point about employers and the money they're investing in their employer 401ks or 403bs. Mm-hmm. And there are, you know, I know that there are many companies and many programs offer socially conscious plans.
Yeah, that's right.
And you have that option, but still to sift through all of that and to know exactly where the 0.6% of your money is going. I don't know.
Except
how you
that
do
not
that.
All. Yeah. I mean, we paid attention to this in the '70s when students began protesting against universities investing in apartheid companies or companies that did business in South Africa. So it's not unprecedented. And this is a company, let me remind you, that has gone to the highest levels of the judicial system in this country to state their right to how they run their business.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just wondering how easy or
how difficult
we've made
it.
You know, we've made it to be to really pinpoint exactly where the money is going at any given time on Monday versus Wednesday versus Friday, because it's being moved
around.
Well,
the other thing is that many of us, Joe and Rosemary, like WAMC, have agents who do this work for us.
Right.
And
right.
In our case, it's Tia Kreff, which most colleges and universities also use. And they are sensitive to this and have various funds, green funds, socially responsible funds, the rest of it. So we have some say in what happens. But in the most part, we want our people to have a retirement.
Yeah, I know, but this is from a company that's saying, "Oh, we want our people to be protected. We have to give them hospitalization, but no, they can't have abortion rights." I don't know, and also my agent, you know, all of our agents do come to us. They know some of my beliefs and will come and say, "Hey, there's great return on this company. Do we invest in it?" And I get to say no or yes.
Well, you
know,
you
deciding.
Have more money than I do.
I wish. Yeah. I have principles, though.
Yes, you do. You have more principles than I do.
I always love when you go through the social funds and the socially conscious funds and the green funds, and you feel really good about yourself. And then when you have that meeting a year later and they start talking about the return and they're like, yeah, it's not quite what we hoped it would be. And then they immediately say, yeah, but you know, you had to be all conscious.
That's true.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that's
thanks.
Right.
David Letterman is retiring. The longest running host in the history of late night television announced yesterday during the taping of a show that aired last night at 11:35 that he will retire from a CBS show next year. It is certainly a shakeup in the talk show lineup, but larger than that, it is a man who has been on late night television for 32 years, and I think by his count last night was some 6,000 shows that he has done, and will be hanging it up at the age of 67. And it's he turned 67 next week. It's a big deal, and much to me, you know, something that has not been that has not come close to a major announcement like this since Carson announced that he was retiring in the late 1980s.
Jay Leno didn't measure up to this, huh?
No.
Hmm.
Not even
close. And when Carson retired, I cared.
Why don't you care about Letterman?
He's never been up at 12:30.
Or 11:30.
That's true,
well, now it's 11:30.
Yeah, 11:30.
Back in
yeah.
the golden days, it was 12:30.
Yes.
I don't know. I think it's like another changing of the guard. It's the baby boomers. We're losing our hold, and there's a plethora of new young talent that's performing at night. And Letterman's not going to be missed. I think he's a genius. He's not going to be missed. There's people replacing him.
Well, you know, I agree and disagree with you. I disagree with you in the sense that I think I still miss Carson. You know, something
absolutely
weird happens in the
Me
news.
Too.
I still miss Johnny Carson, and I will miss David Letterman. I don't think that certainly there are very talented people who are in place who have been extremely influenced. Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, and Conan O'Brien have all said that they owe their careers to David Letterman. I think that so certainly that, you know, that that perspective will go on. I do think he was is a legend. I do think that he revolutionized and changed. I mean, let's not forget when he first came on late night television, Johnny Carson got like was concerned as to how he makes his show more like David Letterman's show. And that was really interesting. And in fact, to the point where, because Carson owned the Letterman show, told Letterman, I don't want you doing a monologue.
Oh.
So it's a very interesting transition.
I only hope that he socked enough money away to be, you know, set after he retires.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I would.
And the one thing we have to worry about is us old people is that the young people are coming along. And it doesn't take long before the young people replace the old people.
Yeah, but
and nobody cares about what we used to be on.
He did this voluntarily. And I think we measure this. You know, it's of course he's set financially, and of course he's had a great legacy. But we all measure this at the end of the day as it reflects on us. And the fact is,
exactly,
he started when I was a freshman in college.
Right.
We watched
him.
I watched every show for 10 years.
Yes.
And now he's going, and then you put the mirror on yourself and you say, oh yeah, guess what? Man. I'm old too.
Yeah, right.
And it is what it is, man.
I won't miss Paul Schaefer, however. He was annoying.
Who?
Paul Schaefer, the music, the little bald music
We have
guy.
One who works for us, not to be confused.
Talented fellow. Talented fellow.
Was in the original cast of Saturday Night Live.
I know.
Yeah, he was good. I don't know. I like the whole
tried to
there.
Like him.
Yeah.
I don't watch television.
You watch some television.
The Rifleman, clearly.
Well, The Rifleman. I watched The Rifleman, and then I found a new one, which is Steve McQueen in Wanted Dead or Alive.
Oh,
well,
sure.
You make
sure.
a great point, Alan. You make a great point, which is that even though he could be off the air for 30 years, you can still enjoy those shows.
In 30 years, Alan will finally watch Letterman.
And think he's just a hoot.
I have a set of Carson DVDs.
Or a Hoot Gibson, maybe.
Hey, Joe, do you want to hear a couple of real fast letters?
Go. We have about a minute and a half. Go ahead.
Richard says, I'm commenting on... Come on now. I'm commenting on Rosemary's assertion that the VOA broadcasts with the truth. I'm not sure there's a correct assertion. Oftentimes it was used as a vehicle of propaganda. Read Chomsky's Manufacturing Covenant to see how words are used to create the convenient truths.
Yeah, and, good point.
And then Hobby Lobby. Regarding Hobby Lobby hypocrisy, their stories are full of products manufactured in China, a country which has had their products, stores are, a country which has been a government policy of forced abortion, contraception under their one-child policy, and like that. And then guns. Hi, as long as our manufacturers are making phenomenal profits, arms sales will continue. That's as much of that as I can read. And Matt Mann says, disgust at work, military bases are perfect, plenty of guns, ammo, and loads. Alan put it nicely, troubled souls.
Excellent. We are out of time, but I want to thank you all very much for writing in. Continue the conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. My thanks to Alan, Rosemary, and Ray. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.